Okay, this is Jonathan Helmke. I'm the University Archivist at the University of Dubuque. It is March the 6th of 2015. Year's going pretty fast already. I'm with John Taylor. John, can you please spell your name and then your year of graduation?
John, J-O-H-N, Taylor, T-A-Y-L-O-R, graduated in 1970.
Okay, 1970, okay. Yes. And so, John, this is going to be a real informal kind of conversation.
Okay.
Could you kind of tell us a little about your background of your childhood? You can start at any age, doesn't matter.
Sure.
What do you think is pertinent or something that's kind of will tell your story of that, too?
I grew up in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, from 1948 to 1966. And that's the home of the Alabama Crimson Tide, University of Alabama. So I made a journey from Tuscaloosa to Dubuque, Iowa to go to school. And it was not my intention to do that. But that was one of the scholarship offers I had. And we had an individual from the National Presbyterian Church speak at our high school,
assembly, okay,
and talked about scholarship offers that his organization had, and I remember thinking, why are you wasting my time? You're not offering me anything. And so I left, and I went to my trigonometry class, and I'm sitting there, and one of the workers from the office came up and asked for me. And I thought, oh no, the principal wants to see me. And then she mentioned some other females in the class, and I thought, they couldn't have been involved in anything. So I felt I was on safe ground. Well, anyway, we got down there, and Dr. Johnson talked to us and offered us help financially. If we would go to the different colleges and universities that he would choose for us. And all of us except one chose to.
Okay.
She's now a judge in Tuscaloosa. Anyway, so I came here. Another young lady and I took a train from Birmingham. Oh, no, we took the bus, as a matter of fact. We took a bus from Tuscaloosa, Alabama, all the way to Dubuque, Iowa. Something I do not recommend.
How long a trip was that?
It was like a two-day trip.
Two-day trip, okay.
Yeah, with, you know, stops, layovers. Yeah. And then we got in Chicago, and they start announcing departures, and I could not understand the thing they were saying. Fortunately, the lady I was with did. And so when we boarded the bus coming to Dubuque, I remember seeing all the cornfields and the rows of corn and
corn.
And more corn. And I thought, oh boy. And then we got off in old downtown Dubuque, and I looked around after we got off the bus, and I started back on the bus. She said, where are you going? I said, I'm going back home. She said, that bus doesn't go back home. I said, watch it.
It's going to go back home.
And about that time, some kids from the University of Dubuque came running up. Hey, hey, are you going up to the University of Dubuque? And she hollered, yes, quickly. And they grabbed my bag, threw us in the car, and brought us up. And then we got up to campus, and everything looked much better than old downtown Dubuque. So.
Can I back up this a little bit here? In terms of your family, I just want to talk a little bit of family background. What did your parents do in terms of family?
My father was a laborer at Gulf States Paper Mill up until the time that they closed up shop. My mother was a teacher in the public school system.
Okay.
And she taught reading and then she went back and got a doctorate degree, and she taught some college courses.
Okay.
Also.
Now, during your childhood, were most of your classes integrated in terms of race, or was it pretty?
None of my classes integrated at all. I think maybe my senior year, they had started to do some integrating of the school systems. It was a strange situation because they had this concept of separate but equal.
Mm.
And
was that very typical in the South?
Yes.
In a lot of cities?
Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe. Sometimes they didn't even try and make it look like, you know, they didn't care. But yeah. Anyway, if you went to my hometown, you would have seen my high school. And then if you travel over on the south side of town, you would have seen the white high school.
Okay.
And my roommate, who was from Bessemer, Alabama, came to visit, and we were driving around. I took him by my high school, and then
yeah.
I was going to take him out and show him some yeah. other things, and not intending to show him the white high school. And he looked at me and he said, you must think I'm stupid. I said, what do you mean? He said, you're just driving around in circles. You're not showing me anything. I said, no, I'm not. He said, we went by your high school before. And they look identical from the outside.
Okay, so identical facade.
Yeah.
Okay.
Inside was the difference with the laboratory equipment and
so money was an issue.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, they wanted to put up, like you said, the facade
yeah.
of being separate but equal, but they fully staffed and fully, what'd you call it in terms of equipment?
Yeah.
Their high school and ours not so much.
Okay.
And so that was one of the things that we got to see. And then I think my brother in his sophomore year would have gone over to the white high school.
He was younger then?
Yes.
Okay, so he went over?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
For that too.
But it was a choice, so he chose to go over there. And then
did that impact you anyway in terms of later on in life? Did you reflect part of your life?
Well, the only difference was, being able to interact and get a feel for mindsets, that was a drawback. But I marveled later on in life. I watched my kids interacting with all the other kids, and I thought how much more advanced they were at their age than I was at mine.
Did you feel like you got a good education? High school?
Yes, okay. I did, yes.
Even if it was separated, yeah. that way you felt like it was still...
The drawback. We did not have the equipment,
mm-hmm.
but we had caring teachers.
Were a lot of them African-American teachers?
They were all.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. There was only one instance where we had some white instructors, and they came down as part of Freedom Rider groups.
Okay, yeah.
And they kind of worked in our high school
mm-hmm.
and taught some classes and assisted with some classes.
Okay, for that too.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to jump now to the Mr. Johnson because this is the second time I've heard this mm-hmm. name before. I want to get this officially
okay.
to make sure I get this right.
Okay.
Because another alumni mentioned his name too.
Mm-hmm.
Because she was recruited.
Okay.
So it was a Dr. Johnson.
Yes.
Was he from the Presbyterian Board of Missions?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Let's make sure I got that right. Do you know the exact name of the program itself that was kind of in charge of this particular recruit?
No, I don't.
Okay. No. I was trying to I may have to call PCUSA and mm-hmm. actually find mm-hmm.
sure.
out.
Yeah.
But this is the second time I've heard yeah. the story, you know, this kind of line of,
yeah.
of a story.
Yeah. He visited schools in Alabama, Mississippi, Georgia, Florida, I believe. I'm not so sure about Florida, but,
okay.
you know, and quite a few of us had come from those states.
Now, was your family Presbyterian at the time?
No.
No, okay.
Baptist.
That's what I thought. Yeah. For that, too. Okay. And so he went to these different schools then, and basically he recruited for Presbyterian schools.
Sure.
But was the goal also, too, is to integrate the white schools, do you think, in terms of, like, Dubuque, you know, for example, to make better the Presbyterian schools more integrated? Or was the goal just to get people, educated in all different environments? Or what was the kind of purpose, do you think, of the program?
Yes. Both.
Both.
Yeah.
It was kind of, we want to integrate these schools in terms of the diversity.
Yeah.
But also provide a avenue for people that may normally might not get.
Yes.
You know.
If you think about it, you know, it's kind of hard to hate someone if you have a working knowledge, everyday knowledge of them and they of you.
Yeah.
You can hate someone you don't know easily, you know, but not so much if, you know, you're side by side doing things and all of that. It's, you can do it, but it's more difficult to do. And so that was pretty much the goal. So we got the opportunity to, you know, coexist and co-mingle and talk about different things. And one of the biggest events happened early on in our freshman year. In our dorm, we were sitting there studying. And my roommate had gone out for something, and he came back and he said, "Man, you wouldn't believe what those crazy white guys are doing." I said, "What?"
He was African American too.
Yeah.
Okay.
He said, "They are knocking on doors," because we just gotten our little kits from the bookstore.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And they were knocking on doors. When people would answer, they spray them with shaving cream. I said, "Man, you are kidding." He said, "No." And so he said, I said, "You think they're going to come to our door?" He said, "They might." So we took one of our trunks and stood it up behind the door. And I said, "Well, if they come, I'm going to get up on the trunk. And you just fling the door open. And then I'll hit them from the top. They won't know what happened." And so, sure enough, we went back to studying. And sure enough, there came the knock on the door. And, you know, I got in position, he got on the other side of the door, flung it open. I started spraying them from the top as they looked up. He got him, he stepped out and got him. So, and then at the end of that, we all got together, all of us, and laughed about the whole thing, you know. And so we kind of went from there. We would have, you know, just different little group meetings in each other's rooms. And one, we talked about discipline, you know, growing up, and the African American kids were saying, "Yeah, you know, my mom or my dad, they would beat us like this," and you know, today we suspend ball players who spank their kids, and you know, whereas in our time, we took it as a given that if you step out of line, that's what you
get. That was Ezra.
And the moral of that story is don't step out of line. But anyway, and I looked at some of the white kids, and I saw this longing, like I missed out on that in my life. There wasn't that love that said to me, you know, "I love you enough to discipline you." So.
Yeah.
We just kind of, you know, co-mingled and talked about things. We didn't always agree, and we didn't always disagree, you know. And there were some very lasting friendships that were formed, you know, based on our college years.
For that, too.
Yeah.
I want to step back just a little bit here.
Sure.
In terms of, you know, you and this other lady were coming from the same area, or same town, right?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. When you came to UD then, what was, how many African-Americans were at campus at that time, roughly, do you remember? Like, in your class, specific class, for example, in 1964, 66 then?
There may have been 20, 30.
23, okay.
Yeah.
Was it a balance gender-wise, or was it mostly male African-Americans, or was it roughly?
It seemed pretty balanced.
Okay.
You know, here's the thing that we noticed, and you know, we didn't confine ourselves just to UD. We mingle with people from Lawrence and Clark also.
Yeah.
But by and large, UD had the greatest diversity going on. And today it's still the same, that UD has
even
the greatest.
Even higher.
Yeah, even higher.
I was looking at the percentages. Yeah,
yeah.
The stats,
know,
I'm looking at.
You know. I come up on campus now to ball games and I look and I say, oh my goodness. You know, but
yeah.
That's just been the commitment of the UD versus Laura's. You know, and I think they're all institutions with their hearts in the right place, but you know, to bring a small number and sit them in the middle, you know, maybe doing them more of a disservice than to bring enough so that. Anyway, you know, it didn't stop us from you know, mingling with other races,
yeah,
or anything like that. But it helped for us in order to be able to continue to do, you know, some of the same social things
that
we were used to doing.
Or that too. So what was your major when you first came?
I majored in math.
Okay.
And we were kind of torn because my roommate left and he went to IIT to major in engineering, and I was thinking about going with him, but I didn't.
Okay.
So.
And you ended with math or another degree?
No, okay. I majored in math. Minored in physics.
Physics, okay. And so in terms of, we'll start with academics first. How many people total were in that math department, you know, for student-wise, were in that math department roughly, do you think?
Maybe two or three.
Two or three, okay. So it was a very small major.
Yeah.
Okay. And
mean African-American?
No, everyone.
Oh, man, it was huge.
Huge. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
But in terms of African Americans, you just kind of pointed out that you and some other else at that time.
Yeah.
Okay. Did you feel accepted in terms of within the department?
Sure.
Okay. For the two. Faculty. Was there any faculty that you remember that made an impact? Not just in your major, but maybe in your gen ed, you know, classes or something that's kind of stuck with you. It could be good or bad, doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Something that made an impact later on or maybe at that point in time.
Yeah. I had a chemistry professor that, you know, I knew he was very good, you know, intellectually. He was kind of tough to follow during his lectures.
Okay.
But you had the perception that he was good. So I did very well in chemistry.
Okay.
I had Professor Wright for some math classes.
Okay.
And he and I could talk about different things, and he would give me pointers as to what it is I should do or need to do, and I did very well with him also.
Okay.
There was Dorothy Taylor.
Ah, Dorothy.
Yeah. physics. And she didn't let up.
And so, what in terms of what, like, she just kept pushing the envelope a little bit?
Yes.
In terms of,
yes,
did she do that for all students?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, she had very high standards.
Very high standards in class for that,
too. Yes, she wanted everybody to excel at what it was they were doing.
Uh-huh.
And then, I can't remember his name. He worked at John Deere and taught part-time.
Okay.
Engineering drawing.
Drafting.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, and he made an impact not only from the standpoint of the class he taught, but he taught me anyway how to step back from the pressures of what you were doing and take a breath. Mm. And you know, he came in one night and we were all there already. Everybody was already there at their boards, sitting there looking forlorn. And down and out, and he came in and he kind of dropped his briefcase and he looked around. said, "What's wrong? You look, everybody looks as though somebody shot their dog." And one guy spoke up and he said, "I worked all day." He said, "This is tough, you know." Somebody said, "Well, I got other classes and this is tough." He said, "Well, I understand it's tough." He said, "But you know, you don't have to do it all at once, but you know, just take little pieces.
Take a piece of the
step
time.
Back, relax a little bit, then come back." And that worked. That helped. So that was a very good class.
For that too. Yeah. It's kind of drafting, like engineering.
Yeah.
For that too. In terms of the students in your class, were they pretty accepting, you know, in terms of ethnic-wise you felt?
For the most part.
Anywhere
you go, you're going to have people who are not.
Yeah.
You're going to have to deal with those one way or the other. So.
Yeah. For that, too.
Yeah.
In all cases there. You felt like you got a good education.
Yes.
Then,
yes.
In terms of future,
yes.
We'll talk about future in a little bit here. But
yes.
For that too, okay. In social realm, I guess. What kind of activities did you participate in? Extracurricular activities or things that you outside the classroom?
I was a member of our Black student body group. We called it and started it and named it the Black Presidium.
Okay, I've heard that too a couple times. Okay.
I was involved in one fraternity on campus.
Okay.
Mu Sigs,
okay.
Yeah. And other than that.
Nothing really. Did you have a job? On campus or off campus?
Yes, I did. About my senior year, I had a job. You know,
okay.
So I did some on campus stuff, and then I went to work for the packing house part time.
Oh, okay. Down the degree pack.
Yeah.
Okay. For that, too. In terms of the Black Presidium group, when did that name change, roughly? Or did it change while you were here, or was that always called the Black Presidium?
It was called the Black Presidium because it was something we started. They gave us a building that was not being used on campus, and it was the original Saul Butler house.
Okay.
Right over here on the corner.
On the corner, okay.
Where they tore it down.
Yeah, we heard the story about that in the 80s, actually.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, we would meet there. Well, we met other places before,
okay.
But we finally started meeting there, and we had a very functioning group. And,
okay.
You know, just talking about issues of the day, like everyone else.
Yeah.
They had the war. We had things that were going on in Black and White America. You know.
Okay.
And so we were deeply involved in that.
How many people participated on a normal week, or what was kind of the ebb and flow of?
We probably had about 40 people.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
For that too.
Yeah, there were probably about 50 or 60 people on campus. So.
That's pretty good percentage.
Yeah,
then
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
So that started in 66 or 67.
Was it? It may have been
68.
Yeah.
When it became more formalized.
Yeah. Yeah.
Kind of organization.
Yeah. Yeah.
For that too.
Yeah.
Then. Okay. And so, and you had social events there too, not just discussion, but all. Social events.
Oh, they might have some dances or stuff like that. You know, before we would just go to one of the houses or dorms and we'd play music and dance, you know, but that infringed on other people, you know.
Okay.
They'd have to turn it down. And so finally we were able to get that place.
Okay.
So.
What kind of music would you play?
It was the hits of the time, you know, R&B.
R&B was more.
Yeah.
For that too.
Yeah.
Can you name a song that you?
My Girl.
Okay. Temptations.
Yeah. A lot of smoking.
Smoking, yeah.
Yeah. Temptations, Four Tops, My Threes, The Vandellas, The Supremes.
Okay.
That kind of stuff.
Or that too.
Yeah.
I've heard this before. I mean, Brian has a more historical background than I do about culture things. I can't refresh my memory. Did that help bridge people together music-wise, or did, in terms of ethnic, or not so much?
It would stir up conversations and controversies from the standpoint we would have some of the guys from the jock fraternities that we knew. Well, that just sounds like the same thing over and over again. It's the same music. And I said, and you think the music that you listen to has so much value? I said, that's why you dance like you dance. There's no soul.
There's no soul.
But, people heard it. There were those who liked it, some of them, so.
For that too.
Yeah.
Okay, for that too. And the dancing, you know, would they participate in?
Well, every Friday night down in the student union, they would have a dance.
Yeah.
And so that would bring everybody together, you know. And we would usually have a little corner where we all hung out, you know.
African American
students.
Okay.
Yeah. But we were all in the
same
down there.
Okay.
So, and we would all have danced to the same music, so, you know. So.
Would they play R&B?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
So they would try to mix the music, not just all Rolling Stone or whatever.
Beatles.
For that too. Okay. For there too. In terms of fraternity, was it pretty integrated at the time, or was it?
At the time, it was. That did precipitate a little dispute within the fraternity because we wanted to rush someone that they didn't want to rush.
Okay.
And so they voted him down, and we voted down somebody they wanted to rush, to which they took a revolt and voted him back in. So we left. That was the end of that.
That was the end of that. Yeah.
But one guy, you know, probably with good intentions, said, you know, we don't want to be known as the black fraternity. And, you know, so.
Did that rub you the wrong way?
Yes, of course it did.
At the time.
Yeah.
As you reflect on that experience, then, do you still feel negative about that? Or as you've grown older and experienced,
I wonder how they feel about that.
Yeah, I got curious.
Yeah.
Do you still are in contact with that person? That
No, you know, those guys have dispersed quite a bit. I was at a homecoming game, and one guy in my class, you know, he stayed around here pretty much like I did.
Yeah.
And he joined the Air Force and became a pilot.
Okay.
And I joined the National Guard. And I wish I'd known. I would have loved to have gone into the Air Force with him, you know.
Uh-huh.
Because flying was something I liked, I wanted to do. Yeah. But he came back and we talked, and he had another guy that was in the fraternity, and he was sitting there, and he acted as though he had no recollection. But, you know, how do you know what's going on mentally, you know, at that point? And this was maybe 2 or 3 years ago, so.
For that, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting, memories.
Yeah.
You know, what things you do remember and what you don't remember.
Yeah.
You know, for that too.
Yeah.
In terms of the.
Well, I mean, he didn't act as though he remembered me at all. I remembered him.
Oh.
you know, so.
Okay.
And, but, you know, I don't know what.
What was going on.
Yeah, you know. Cause, for that too. You know, dementia starts at different stages.
Yeah.
For everyone. And I fear sometimes that I may walk by someone that I had intimate or knowledge of early on in life, and if I have not seen them in years, I may not even remember them. So
for that too,
yeah.
Can you describe a little bit of the overall campus culture? Let's start with race relations first. Uh-huh. Over those 4 years,
sure.
Did it feel like it kind of went in one direction, or did it go, you know, or was it kind of even throughout the years in terms of the overall climate? And that can include faculty, administrators, sure. Students, you know.
Well, you know, I think you had little pockets of everything.
Okay.
You know,
yeah.
Just like society.
Yeah.
And that's what college will do. It will give you a glimpse of everything, because you will experience
everything. Yeah.
You go to a bigger college campus and you get a little more.
A little more of
it. But we saw pretty much everything. There were things that remained stable, level, relationships didn't change. There were some that, you know, were the Cowboys coming in and they were the Cowboys going out. They thought they were too conservative for anybody or anything, and that was the way they were. Yeah, and then, you know, you take the war was raging, and you had protests that way.
Yeah,
and then Dr. King was assassinated in 1968, and you know, that made a difference, because one fraternity group sat out on the quad and was saying how they were glad he was assassinated, you know.
Can I ask you how you felt about that?
Didn't like that.
Didn't like that at all.
Yeah.
Was there a retribution to them?
No.
Either by administrators or
no.
By, okay.
No. And not even from the guys who were members of their fraternity, you know.
Oh, that were African American.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
And I look at them today, you know, when I see them, and I wonder how they are so tight when they know exactly what was said. And they didn't say it to a guy my size or a guy their size.
Yeah.
They said it to the smallest African-American girl on campus, you know, so. Who was dating at one time one of their frat brothers? So,
very interesting. Very interesting.
So,
And so, so at that particular event, then, what was your first reaction when you heard the news? For example, was it shock or was it
shock? Yeah.
For that too.
Yeah, you'd. You find it hard to imagine how anyone at an institution of higher learning would harbor feelings like that.
Yeah.
I want to say stupid feelings like that, you know, because you're saying that you're aspiring to higher education and a higher awareness of yourself and your surroundings, and then you would say something like that. Yeah.
For that too.
Yeah.
In terms of, was there never any kind of, not intentional racism, but this kind of this undercurrent, do you feel, or was it mostly blatant, you know, in terms of ignorance or people not?
You know, not so much on campus that you had to worry about. I think there were a few staff people, you know. When I say staff, I don't mean instructors, security or maintenance that would make little statements, you know. But these were people that you'd be talking to all the time, and they'd say stuff, and you'd look at them like, what?
Yeah.
You know, and but not so much on campus. You know, off campus, yeah.
That's my next question, is off campus.
Yeah.
Was there a particular experience you mind sharing? If it's too tough, don't worry about it. But was there an off-campus experience? And you can, you know, be as honest or not as honest, I guess.
Well,
but.
You know, we were always aware that we were different because we would walk down the street mm-hmm. and people would drive by in their cars and turn all the way around, wouldn't stop driving. And turn all the way around, and we just knew they were going to hit something or somebody, you know, doing that. And
why do you think they did that?
Huh?
Why do you think they did that?
Well, but because in Dubuque, I don't think they saw a lot of African Americans,
okay.
you know, that type of thing.
So it was a curiosity.
Curiosity, you know, whatever.
Okay.
You know.
Yeah.
There
like
were,
on university, they
yeah,
would.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and then, you know, there might be racial slurs if you are further away from campus. I know one night I was walking over by Kmart, and I got the racial slur out of the window, and they were driving, I'm walking.
Uh-huh.
So I ran around like I was going to try and cut them off, and I stopped. I get up to the corner, there they are, stopped at the light, and I'm thinking, oh, what am I going to do now? So I knew which one said it, so I opened the door and I pulled him out of the car, and I asked him, what did he say? And he goes, sir, I'm sorry, I didn't mean it.
Were they teenager?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, just a little high school. And the folks behind him, cut that out, what are you doing? I said, you know. He needs to learn not to be saying racist things, so they rolled their window up, and I threw him back in the car. It was either I was going to have that confrontation or have them turn around and say, he's really scared of us. So, you know, but and sometimes that happens, you know, you get one person
yeah.
In a car like that who will say something and the other three are sitting there like, that's not my sentiment. Why are you saying
that? Why you're saying that?
Yeah.
Implies that we all believe the same
thing. Yeah,
So. For that too. Any physical, punches or any physical racism you felt in terms of, or was it pretty mostly verbal type of thing?
Yeah. Just
verbal.
I don't think anybody would have gotten physical or anything. Not that I was real big, but I was big enough.
Big enough that.
Yeah.
For that too.
Yeah.
Did you feel any threatening threats? Okay.
No.
For that too.
Then freshman year we went over to Kmart because, like I said, my roommate and I were from Alabama and we were going to get long johns and stuff to be ready for
the winter.
Yeah, which we did, and we were looking at stuff, and you know, and we checked out, and we got outside, and this guy stopped us and said, let me see those gloves. And he said, what gloves? He said, those gloves you were looking at back there. He said, I put those back. No, you stole those gloves. And so he went through the whole thing. You know, at first we thought he was trying to ask us where did we find those gloves that so that he could get a pair. But he didn't buy them. And so the guy searched them and everything right out there. Yeah, so. And then let us go, but That was kind of our introduction to the city of
Dubuque.
Yeah.
For that too.
Yeah.
Did you see the city change at all during the time while you were here? Well, say stick to college because then you stayed, you know, afterwards. But or was it pretty stable?
Well, you know, after I went to work down at the packing house and everything, I got involved with. Other people who were from the city, some who were students, you know, at Loras and
everything. Okay, yeah.
So I got out in the city a little more that way, and it was pretty much like on campus. You had people who were racist and didn't mind admitting they were racist, and you just left them alone. And then you had people that, you know, weren't that way. So
okay, for that too.
Yeah.
So we'll kind of go journey from now a little bit.
Okay.
In terms of, you got down to school.
Yes.
And what was kind of your journey, I guess, from school?
I was married my senior year, and we had a child, and I was working, and she had 2 years to go before she graduated.
So. Okay, okay.
So I continued to work. Started out with the pack, and then went on active duty, came back, and then went to John Deere.
Okay, yeah.
Worked at John Deere for about 14, 15 years.
Okay.
And then I went to work for the state of Iowa.
Okay.
So.
Okay.
And most of that was here in Dubuque, although for about, I'd say almost 10 years, 9 years or so, I lived in the Quad Cities in Clinton.
Okay.
So
what did you do for the state then?
I worked for the Employment Service.
Okay.
And just kind of found jobs for people, helped them to file unemployment claims, and then the last duty I had was working in welfare reform, helping parents who were receiving assistance work their way through the system, either get work or go to school.
Was that in the 90s with the Clinton initiative, or was that a little different?
Well, that was part of it.
Okay.
So I started there in 86, and then I believe it was in the 90s that that we formed that unit. And I went to work doing that.
Okay.
And so
okay.
We brought that up until I retired in 2010.
So, okay. So how many years were you with the state?
24 years. 24 plus years.
So. Plus the 15 with John Deere.
Yeah.
Then.
Yeah.
And then after retirement, what's kind of been your journey?
Well, kind of working with Rock of Ages. Our pastor, who had been here for about 25 years or so, retired.
And, okay.
I was the associate pastor, so I took over for him.
Okay.
And we're just trying to work to increase the membership and also look for a permanent,
location.
Location, yeah.
How long the church has been established? 25 years?
We formed the church in 1980.
Okay.
It was some UD students and some
okay.
John Deere workers.
What was your original church at when you first met?
Originally, we met here on UD campus over in the administration building now.
Okay.
Over there. There was a chapel over there that we used for church services.
Okay, and then we got to, okay. So you're continuing that role then?
Yes.
For that too?
Yes.
And so, do you live here in Dubuque or do you live out?
No, I live here.
Okay, I know it's your Fenimore jacket there.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I had a niece who was playing ball over in Fenimore.
Okay. So. And your wife grew up here or did she?
She grew up in Fenimore.
Okay, and so she's from that area.
Yeah.
For that too.
She works over there also.
Okay, for that too. And how many kids did you have?
Two kids. Yeah.
And where do they live at right now?
One's in Iowa, one's in Michigan.
Okay, and what do they do?
One is has a master's degree in traffic planning, and the other was working on his doctorate I forget what it's called, but and he's doing something with Iowa State.
Okay.
Down there,
and down
she's
there.
Working for really the city of Detroit through a grant from the state of Michigan. Planning traffic in and around Detroit, which, you know, she's kind of hampered because they don't want them to do real traffic planning, which means mass transit. Because of the auto industry.
Auto industry. Yeah. So it's a balance between that there. Kind of go back just a little bit here.
Sure.
What made you decide to stay in Dubuque?
Well, initially, waiting for my ex-wife to graduate from UD.
Okay.
And then I got a job with John Deere.
Mm-hmm.
And that was about the time that, you know, the economy started to tighten up.
Yeah.
So, you know, there weren't a lot of jobs around. So
uh-huh.
we just kind of stayed put here. Plus, she got on at Deere also. And
okay.
So.
For that too, so yeah. Most of the job during those 70s and 80s, that was tough.
Yeah,
tough times for that too. For that too, was there any time during that journey after that you wanted? Feel free to stop. stop here. That you said, well, I want to go back south, or I wanted to go a different place.
Well, yeah, I thought about it. The problem with going back south was that they did not have, any meaningful thing around Tuscaloosa that I wanted to do.
Okay.
You know, I'd known several teachers who stopped teaching and went to work where my dad was working.
Okay.
So that tells you what the pay was like.
Pay was like,
So. That didn't interest me, so we just kind of stayed here. Mercedes did move in down there, you know, and that was in the 80s, 84, as I left John Deere, and I put in applications there, but nothing ever came of that.
Okay,
so.
For that too.
Yeah.
So in John Deere, you were an engineer then?
I started out in personnel.
Okay.
And I worked in personnel for about 4 years or so, and then I went to industrial engineering.
Okay.
And at time jobs out on the floor and produce standards and all of that. And I left that after about 3 or 4 years and went into plant supervision.
And okay. So, for that too. Do you still have friends? For that too.
Yeah. Not to mention all the people I've hired out there who meet me and said, you hired me.
And friends with the state, I mean, say employees too,
when
you were working with the state.
Yeah.
Now, do you commute to Davenport then, or did you move?
I moved to Davenport.
Okay.
Yeah.
In that area.
And then when I moved back here, I commuted to Davenport.
Wow, okay.
For
how many years did you?
About a year.
About a year.
And then I transferred to the Dubuque office.
Okay.
And I retired from the Dubuque office.
For that too.
Yeah.
Okay. So you've probably seen many changes over that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
40-some year period of time.
Oh, yeah.
For that too, then.
I got to watch firsthand Highway 61 being built.
Oh, yeah.
From Dubuque to the Quad Cities. And got to go through all of that construction.
I mean, that was a mess.
Yes.
For that, too. Anything that we haven't talked about yet that you wanted to share, you've been thinking about, or something connected to either, you know, before, after, you know, kind of those three segments a little bit, but anything that you want to share?
The only thing I would talk about is that UD has probably the best standing in terms of what it has done for the African American community or African Americans at large. The only downside is I've seen some of the athletes who have played ball for UD
mm-hmm.
who don't have degrees.
Mm, they never finished.
And I I've always maintained that if a school commits to a kid on the front side, they should stay with that kid until the end and make sure that they have degrees. We have one guy that was drafted, that was inducted into the Hall of Fame, has no degree.
And very interesting.
Shame.
When did you notice that more? Was it a certain decade that you saw that more, or a certain time period, is it kind of?
Yeah, I watched the kid play, and he came along after I graduated.
Okay.
I still watched him play up here and interacted with him a little bit in the community. He left, went to Chicago, and then came back, you know, and he's working in the school system, and there's another guy who played. He's working in the school system out in Dyersville, and those are just two that I know of that, you know, never got degrees. I think that's something that, you know, and a lot of that can be on them too, you know, because the guy I fish with and who's also a deacon at my church started at Loras, and they would tell him, you know, you're lucky, Loras treated you better, and he, you know, you have a degree and we don't. And he said, well, why don't you go back and get it, you know?
Uh-huh.
And they have not. But I think that's something that could be righted, you know, if anyone was of a mind to do that. But I know it takes effort on their part too.
For that too. It's a two-way relationship.
I don't know that they have that kind of commitment to do it. You know, they seem rather satisfied where they are.
Uh-huh. But, you know. For that too, then.
Yeah.
For them too.
Yeah.
Thank you, John.
Okay.
For the great interview.
Okay.
For that too. And so, one more question, actually.
Sure.
And just kind of, in terms of, have you stayed in contact with most of your classmates?
Some I have.
Okay.
Yeah, some I have on Facebook and
stuff. Oh yeah,
with like
technology.
That, you know. And the one kid that was the pilot, he and I are Facebook pals, you know. So,
was he African American too?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, he wasn't.
Before that too.
Yeah.
Okay.
He was my fraternity brother with the Musigs, and you know, we kinda came in together, we played together in the whole ball of wax, so, you know, and so he's just one that, you know, and really we had been estranged until one homecoming here.
Oh.
And homecoming, you know, makes a lot of difference in terms of reconnecting
with people.
Yeah.
And we're hoping the exhibit's being around homecoming.
Yeah.
So we're hoping, knock on wood, as we're talking to people, we're encouraging people from California and people from, we've been talking to people all the country, from Georgia, we've been talking to come back. So I'm hoping that this might encourage people this coming fall to come back.
Yeah. I tried to get African Americans to come back to one, and that we worked very diligently on that, made a lot of contacts, and we had a fair showing. People did come back, not all of them attended the function that we had planned.
Yeah. Okay.
But they did come back. They were able to see the changes in the in the college, in the university, and the football field and everything that's changed around.
Was that in the 2000s, early 2000s?
Yeah, about three years ago.
Okay.
3 or 4 years ago.
Before that, too.
Yeah.
Well, keep us posted if you have any suggestions. Brian, I've been thinking about this, of how to integrate, you know, this exhibit with, we're talking to alumni and folks and, you know, and Peter and folks and to see, we're talking to Jeff next week, you know, about this. And so I'm hoping that we can, we're thinking more of a social gathering too, possibly, you know, to connect us with this. But for that too. So thank you very much, John.
Yeah.
I really appreciate it.
That might be a way to